Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome, dear listener, to another episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by the 40 Watt Podcast's Philip Carter.
There goes the neighborhood.
Exactly. There indeed does go the neighborhood. Welcome, Philip. Welcome back. It's been a few weeks since we've had you on the podcast, which means you've bought a few guitars.
Oh, I know. I've also sold a few things, thankfully, because this time around, I did not just have spare money lying around. It hurts me to sell things, Joe. It's real hard. I hate it.
Yeah,
I want to keep everything.
Well, you could be like me and actually keep everything. I'm so terrible at sending things. And it's more finding the time to photograph things and list things. And I know you do a lot of stuff on like Facebook Marketplace and things like that. And I've still got the fear of Facebook Marketplace. And I think being such good friends with Mark Packham, he works for Reverb.com. If I ever used anything other than Reverb, I think he'd be very upset. So,
you know, friendships can survive that. Good friendships can survive that. Also, I mean, Facebook Marketplace is really, really scary, to be honest. It can be real sketchy. There's lots of scams. There's lots of just garbage over there. But I've also found some of the coolest trades and the coolest deals by listing and just being picky. The beauty of Facebook Marketplace for selling things for me is that I list it and I'm never obligated to sell it for what somebody offers. Like on Reverb, if I list it and somebody buys it, that's it. It's sold. I don't have a chance to, as I do often, reconsider selling. But the other thing that I like is just being able to get other weird gear trade offers.
Yeah.
And so that's really great.
I do think one of the things that places like Everb and Rebay suffer from is that so much, especially dear listener, if you like cool old gear like me and Philip do, so much of that stuff is owned by cool old people.
Yeah.
And they, generally speaking, are more likely, you know, the generation above us, Philip, they really adopted Facebook. That's their thing. Whereas, you know, so the other stuff, not so much. So you're far more likely to find great deals and weird gear and cool, interesting, rare gear on Facebook Marketplace.
It's all over there. Now, you got to weed through an awful lot of BS to get to it, but...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you've got to weed through the people sending, you know, like a 10 used 0.50 mil plectrums, you know, like
or like there's this one guy who thankfully he probably does not listen to this podcast. I can't imagine he does. I feel like every single thing I list, he just sends me a message like he's never talked to me before, and it just says, is this available for trade? And like a picture, several pictures of his entire music room. I'm like, yes, make an actual offer. Don't just send me pictures of all your crap. Like, and it's always like pointies and like Marshall JCM 900 half stacks. And I'm like, yeah, not interested in any of that. I just alienated a large portion of your listener base. Yeah, that's okay.
It's fine. I think most people, most of you, dear listener, have learned to understand that I'm not necessarily correct. You know, my tastes aren't the right thing, but they are – you know, I do like a very specific range of stuff. A lot of you disagree with me on those, and that's fine. And
they're the right things for you, though. That's
I still
the
try
trick.
And talk about the things I don't like. Maybe I should do a bit. Do I need to do a better job of that, dear listener? Do let me know. I got a really scathing 1-star on Apple Podcasts last week. The problem with Apple Podcast reviews is they like ding up on my phone, and it was like the end of a really stressful long day. I'd had a bunch of meetings where I was like late for deadlines on stuff, and I was working into the night, really trying to get things finished. There'd been a fault on the podcast provider that we have. They'd literally lost all record of Guitar Nerds as a show on their back end. It still existed on the front end, but it would gone. Like, my account wasn't there. They found it in the end. It was a fault. But at that point in time, I was mega stressed. And then my phone's like, bing. I'm like, what's this? And it was basically someone having a go that we don't like metal, was the sort of the gist of it. But I do like metal.
I don't, and that's okay. I mean, I do. I like cheesy metal. I've been told that I like the Mustang Sally of metal.
Right.
And listeners, I'll tell you who they said that about. I like Dragon Force, and I realize that they are like a caricature of metal, but I like them. I made the mistake of going running listening to Dragon Force once, though.
It was
a very fast mile, but I didn't get past that mile.
Well,
yeah,
I am unsurprised. Now, dear listener, this is the 17th episode in season 5. I've called this episode the Mulecaster. Because if you also follow the 40 Watt podcast and everything that Phillips does on Instagram, you've seen that he recently got a Mulecaster. So we're going to delve deep on that brand. And actually, we did talk about it, I think, the last time you were on Guitar Nerds as well.
Yeah, because I think I'd placed the order at that point because I did order new. I'd been on the list since last year and had kind of put it off. It's kind of a long story. That I'll just say really fastly when we get to it.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so we're going to take a look at that guitar. We're going to talk about that guitar and a few other things. Now, just before we recorded this, we started recording this podcast, Matt and I were over on Instagram doing a live giveaway for the vintage Pro Shop build that we've been harping on about for the best part of the last month. I had all of the names. We're in this lovely bag. If you're watching, dear viewer, Matt and I had picked like a top 20 names, and we chose the winner out of those. The winner, if you haven't seen from the announcement on Instagram, or I'll announce it on all the other social media platforms. But if you haven't seen, the winner that came out was Coxie Loxley, Martin Cox, over on Facebook, on the Facebook group, the Guitar Nerds Facebook group. He came up with that. I really liked that one because it was, you know, he had one of the stipulations I'd said for the giveaway was, you could make it about the color, the brand, yourself, us, whatever. Few people made it about themselves, and I really liked that he managed to work his name in with Loxley. Obviously, the Robin Hood reference there. The guitar was, of course, British Racing Green, or Sherwood Green. It's one of the two. I don't know which one it actually was.
I think y'all did British Racing Green, but yeah, it's so close to a Sherwood Green.
Exactly. Exactly. There's not a lot in it. But yeah, so I really liked that. I thought that was a good one for the win. But we had some great suggestions. I won't read all of them off on here, but some of the ones I really liked that were clever that I was almost disappointed that a cleverer one didn't come out on top in that. But I really liked one, I'll pronounce it wrong, but Coniero, which was Latin for a chant that's made together.
Okay.
Sort of thing. So I was like, I like that. There was sort of attention to detail there. The
doesn't really roll off the tongue, though, does it?
No, not quite. And one of our favorites was Nurkel Zither, which is Nurkel is the original word for being studious. So it's where nerd came from as a short, and Zither being one of the first strung instruments. It was nerd guitar. Yeah, exactly. So I did really like that.
I feel like that needs to be a band name. really badly.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that would be good. But there were, yeah, there were some great ones. I really liked what one person had called it, the NERD, nerd, you know, as an abbreviation. And it stood for New Evolution of a Retro Design, which that was good.
That's very corporate America.
Yeah, it was. And my other favorite was Gordon Bennett, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with this, Philip, but Gordon Bennett is something we say here in the UK. It's kind of very specific to London. It's a Cockney expression. And we would say Gordon Bennett. And it means,
oh my goodness. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah. It could also, I feel like I can figure out the origin, what that's meant to be. Those of you that have ever watched Firefly, it feels like it's the same origin as Goram. If you've ever seen, are you familiar with Firefly, Joe?
I am, but it's been so many years. I used to love that show more than anything. Yeah. It's the worst show to ever get canceled. But
Agreed. But I'll put it in the chat. That's okay. What it's a shortened form of.
I see. Ah, right. Okay. Yeah. So Gordon Bennett probably had some sort of slang that was around that. But Gordon Bennett, the fellow, was a New York-based millionaire who put a lot of money into racing. And between 1900 and 1905, he had a French race cup called the Gordon Bennett Cup. And it was the first time that green was applied to the British cars in the race, creating British Racing Green.
That is really, really inside baseball. I know. That's real deep diving.
I know. I really wanted that one to come out of the hat. It was, if I was picking like my favorite name, I'd have probably picked that one. You know?
Yeah. That is a really, really good name.
Yeah. It's a good old deep dive.
I'm disappointed that one didn't win, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
No offense, Martin.
Yeah. Well, I think Martin is somewhere in Europe. So I'm looking forward to not having to pay the import charges if it had gone to America. Because I was like looking at this and I was like, yeah. You bear in mind our audience is something like, on Instagram, our audience is something like 70% US. So the podcast, it's something like 40, 50% US.
That makes a lot of sense.
So I was like, someone in the States is going to win this and it's going to cost me hundreds of pounds to send it to them. And
I get really interested in where my listenership is on my podcast as well. Right. I think it's really interesting. 25% of my listenership is Europe and the UK.
Oh, wow. That's pretty high.
I think that's your fault. I think it's me showing up on this show is where I get a lot of my UK and European listenership.
Yeah.
So
yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yeah. I think ours is only 30% in the UK. Guitar nodes, but then with a big split of everywhere else.
Yeah.
Yes, so sorry, I've got a tissue, dear listener, if you're viewing. I've woken up with a random cold, so I'm pushing through. But yes, this week we do want to talk about the Mulecaster. We want to talk about, I've been putting together a partition bass, you know, a precision bass out of parts, so we're going to talk about that.
And yeah, then, that one rolls off the tongue too really well, doesn't it?
yeah, not the best, but and I think there's another guitar of yours we're going to talk about, and we might touch upon a little bit of news because there have been some interesting releases that have come out recently. Should we start, for a change on this podcast, should we start with the actual subject for this week's podcast,
Mulecaster?
That sounds like a great place to go first. So, dear listener, if you're not familiar with Mule, the brand, then you should be. They make really, only, is it two shapes, three shapes? Not a lot.
So they have two shapes in the Mulecaster. They have the Mavis, and they have their resonators that they build.
Right. And you have a Mavis as well.
I do have a Mavis. So Matt Ike over at Mulecaster, Matt's a really interesting guy. He did a really great episode with friend of both of our podcasts, Blake, over at the Tone Mob recently. I think it was Matt's third time being on the show. It's a really great episode if you want to really get in his head a little bit. They barely talked about guitars. It was great. But Matt has a history going back in acoustic music, and he used to work at, I hope my memory is not failing me. I believe he used to build guitars at Huss and Dalton, which is a boutique acoustic guitar builder. But he's really into resonators and slide guitar, but not just slide, just, you know, rootsy folks, blues music. And so he left. He started Mule Resophonic Guitars. And he had every intent of just making resonators.
Right.
And he makes a really great resonator. I play resonator. I want one eventually. They're listeners. They are very expensive. All these guitars are very expensive. We're just going to say that at the get-go. These are not cheap guitars. I just, if that's what you're looking for, I'm on the podcast. What do you expect? I'm a snob. I know. I'm going to start the counterpart to this podcast called Guitar Snobs. So last year I had played a bunch of them at Fretboard Summit in Chicago, and then I played some more at NAMM, and I was, and even before NAMM, after Fretboard Summit, I knew I needed a one or two of his guitars in my life. And so what I really wanted was a Mavis, though, which is this thin bodied electric resonator. And so I put in a deposit that none of these were sent to me. I paid, you know, and I put in the deposit, which is a non-refundable deposit, totally understandable. And in the wait for it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
It was taking a little longer than it should, and I got antsy. And one popped up used with all the options I would have chosen. There aren't a lot of options with these. Like, you don't get to choose neck shape. Like, the neck shape is the neck shape. That's yeah. Just it. Nut width, those kinds of things. The pickups. You don't choose that stuff. It is what it is. And I love that about their, you know, we build what we build. That's it. So I put in the deposit. It was taking a little longer than it should. And I got antsy, and one popped up used at a good price, and I negotiated it down a little bit from Chicago Music Exchange, and I ended up just buying that Mavis from Chicago Music Exchange because I had all the options I wanted, and it still, even including my deposit, came out less than new.
Right.
These guitars typically go for more than new because the wait list for them.
Of course,
you know, it's a wait, it's a build time. It's not a long one. We're talking like single digit months. So
that surprises me actually. That's very good.
Yeah, no, it's really good. I think last time I checked the website, it's like 5 months from the time you put your deposit in. So I reached out to Matt, and it turned out it was just a pure paperwork error. They missed my name on the list. They were supposed to have contacted me before I got mine. Things happen. Errors happen, you know? So I contacted him. He said, dude, I'm so sorry. He said, here's the link. Order when you're ready. And I said, well, I bought one. I got antsy and I bought one. And I said, can I apply my deposit to a MuleCaster at some point in the future? He said, absolutely. He said, we can absolutely do that. So I played some more at NAMM, and I was like, you know what? It was time. I had sold a bunch of stuff earlier this year. I've sold 10 grand worth of gear this year. I have sold 10 grand worth of gear.
We're not even
at
the halfway point.
Yeah, I know. I have sold 10 grand. Don't ask me how much money's in my gear account. It's not any. So But a lot of it was like pedals. I sold most of my pedals.
Well, yeah, you had that massive pedal board, and you've gone down to just having the two automatones and the HX.
Exactly. And I've still got some other stuff by like friends, but it's like one day some of that stuff may even go because I can't keep everything.
Yeah.
But so I sold a bunch of stuff and had the money. And I was like, you know what? Now's the time. There are so few options, listeners, for these MuleCasters. They do a single cut and a double cut, so basically a Strat or Tele body style. We should also say they are metal bodies. This is a thin steel, not wood. They are completely hollow.
Thicker than a Fender would be as well, right?
Not really. I don't have my Telecaster in here.
I guess they're not. I always thought they were a little deeper than that.
No,
I think it's probably the neck heel that makes it.
The neck heel makes you think it. Yeah. And of course the neck heel is so obvious because you've got wood to metal, and that feels so obvious. Like it really stands out in your mind.
Yeah.
When you're playing, you don't notice as much, but so you got single cutaway, double cutaway. On the single cutaway, the Tele style, you have a big thin line Telecaster style guard, or you have a small Cabernet style guard.
Oh, that is the dream. I mean, I love both, but I would always choose Cabernet if presented with the option.
Yeah, see, I love the big thin line guard because I love the tort. I love the faux tort that they use because it just looks so good. And so it took me a little while to really decide on finish. Ultimately, was what I was trying to decide. It's like, what color am I going? And then I kept seeing there's an Australian guitarist named Adam Miller. He's an incredible player. Yeah, and he plays a Telecaster that may or may not have actually influenced the first MuleCaster, thin line Tele. And so I was like, I'm going to get that because it's in a cream or white, like a faded white. And so that's what I ended up ordering. And it came in a couple of weeks ago, finally. And I could not be more excited. Oh, yeah. The other option you can decide is whether it's baritone or standard tuned. There's nothing else that changes about the instrument.
You can't pick the pickups, but you can choose the tuning.
Exactly. Isn't it beautiful? And so Matt makes a big deal of this on the website. He says, when you get it, if you don't like the baritone or you don't like standard tuning, you can just put other strings on it. There's nothing necessary. It doesn't need to go to a luthier.
You don't have to change the nut.
Don't have to change the nut. Nothing.
Wow.
It's wild. And so I said, well, let's go with baritone and let's see what it sounds like. And if I really love it as baritone, I'll leave it that way. If not, I'll switch it.
Are the strings? Are they 17s?
That's, you know what? Before we started recording, I told myself I was going to look that up and so that I would have that information available. And I messed up and didn't do that. So I'm going to try to do that while also talking at the same time, which is such a wild way to do things. So I think that Matt is making the coolest guitars. Are they the most versatile? Yes, they're 17 to 64.
17 to 64, yeah.
And so I think Matt and the folks over at Mule Resophonic are making the coolest guitars. They may not be the most versatile instrument in the world, although I would say the MuleCaster is extremely versatile. They may not be the most customizable instrument on the planet. But what they are just absolute inspiration machines.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Stringjoy Guitar Strings, the world's first true guitar string custom shop. The thing that I love most about Stringjoy is just their attention to detail, their dedication to making their strings the best in the world. And that's a labor-intensive task that they don't shy away from. Stringjoy are also innovative. They're always looking for new ways to make strings better. As guitar players, we've become so used to all the shortfalls of commercially available strings that we stopped even looking for them to be better, last longer, intonate well, easily. Stringjoy bring all of that to every pack of strings they make, and they're available almost as readily as any other generically made guitar string. Stringjoy strings are available at stringjoy.com and at 400 plus dealers across the globe. If your local store doesn't stock Stringjoy yet, ask them to.
The first time I picked up a MuleCaster in Chicago at Fretboard Summit, I just started playing things I'd never played before. And that's when I knew I have to have one of these. Because this makes me... It's a six-string guitar with two pickups and a three-way switch. And, you know, but there's not... This isn't groundbreaking things here. But it seemed so different in my head that it made me do things differently. And yeah, it's in my, it, this is absolutely one of my, if I have to get rid of everything, trim down to two or three guitars, this is in the two or three that I keep.
That's very cool. Do they make their own pickups as well?
They do. They make their own pickups. They call them the Tom Thumbucker.
Right. And they are humbuckers.
They are mini humbuckers, yes. It's the same pickup they put in their resonators. It's the same pickup they put in the Mavis. It's the same pickup they put in the Mulecasters.
Well, that's very cool. That's I guess if you're going to hang your hat on one pickup, a mini humbucker is not what I expect to be the choice, but...
And they sound so good. They just sound good. The one in the Mavis sounds amazing.
Yeah.
And so they appeal to me. They're very me, listeners. If you've heard me on this podcast or heard me on my own podcast, you know that I'm very much like a blues Americana roots kind of guy. It is that sound. It's so vibey. It's so unique. It's so very much its own thing that it's easy to find your voice on an instrument like this because it's got so much character.
Yes. Yeah. Character is what this instrument has in droves. And of course, I guess the most famous player for me of this guitar that I can think of is, why is his name gone? Ariel Posen.
Yeah. So the whole baritone strings on it is called a Posen caster because Ariel was the first one who was like, yeah, that's what I want to do. And in fact, the double cutaway, the Strat style body exists because of Ariel Posen. Originally, that wasn't even going to be an option.
I see.
And so it took a few years of him convincing Matt to make one. And it's funny because the guitar started as Matt just trying to learn welding.
Right.
So he started making these guitar bodies just to practice welding. Wow. Just for fun, and they just took off.
Yeah, yes, evidently, clearly. I'm still really surprised and impressed that it's like a 5-month wait. That's a very reasonable wait list for this.
Yeah.
I can't believe you got antsy in that short window.
I did. I got super antsy. And yeah. It's worth noting they also make a bass now.
Wait, what? I didn't even know this.
Oh, did you not know this?
No, I'm going to head straight on over to...
Yeah, they make a bass, the Mule bass. It is a metal-bodied P bass.
What? Oh, no. I just spent all my money. I can't now. Oh, the Thunder Mule.
Yeah, there it is.
Thunder Mule, dear listener. Oh. That's actually pretty reasonable. Yeah, the base price is $3,300.
The wait time is 6 weeks.
Oh, no.
6 weeks.
No. Oh, that's so reasonable. I could do this.
It is incredibly reasonable.
Okay. This is annoying. Annoying. Thank you, Philip.
You're very welcome. Now, they are not making their own bass pickups. Aguilar is making their pickups.
That's an odd choice. Pickups. I'm very surprised going for such a modern company. I mean, Aguilar make great stuff. I just, you know, with such a... I expect to see them with Cream Tea or Lola or, you know...
Right. That's what I would fully expect,
even
too,
Bare Knuckles. Someone with a bit more, like, retro appeal. Sorry.
Yeah. Because when I think of Aguilar, I don't think of pickups. I think of their amps.
Yeah. So I think of the other company that they have their pickups in all the time, which is Spectre.
Oh, right. But that's what Matt has decided to go with. I think David Landreth from the Bros Landreth, you know, which obviously the Ariel Posen connection used to play in the Bros Landreth.
Of course.
He has at least one. I know David also just came out with a signature Duesenberg, so he's probably not talking about the other basses all that much. But it's real cool. Got to play one of those at NAMM as well.
Oh, really?
The basses, yeah, they were real rad.
Yeah, they look fantastic. Now we're going to give you, dear listener, a little audio treat, a little demo of Philip's Mulecaster. So we decided we were going to do this podcast, I wanted Philip to do a little demo of the Mulecaster, and we spoke about maybe doing it as a collaboration thing. So I built a backing track for Philip and sent it over, and then he played over the top of that. So I've made a sort of bluesy backing track using Addictive Drums 2. That's the drum software I always use on any of these demos that you hear, dear listener. Always Addictive Drums 2. I think they are great if you want to, you know, record with easily programmable drums, either through pads like I do, or if you just want to put them in on a MIDI keyboard or just draw in the beat. They're very good and they sound fantastic, easy to edit. I don't know why I'm doing an advert for Addictive Drums right now, but anyway, so they're very good. So I did it with that. My Grez Bass 6, my Mendocino Bass 6, which I love so much. It is so gorgeous and fun to play. It's one of those instruments, just like Philips Finding with a MuleCaster, I just feel creative on it. It's something that I pick up, I can't put down, I find myself doing new, interesting things. Tonally, I absolutely love it. On this recording, I've got it kind of sounding a bit like a Hofner violin bass because it's that Charlie Christian pickup right in the neck that I've got. I'm palm muting and playing fingerstyle, and I'm running into an Ampeg B15 plugin, and I've got the Universal Audio LA-2A compressor, which I'm really like ramping up the gain, so it really captures it. You really get the pick attack on the palm muting, which I love it when you've got that compression that's a bit over the top. Then I'm providing Grez Mendocino, my normal Grez Mendocino single cut strung with flat wounds, is just doing a couple of rhythm guitars in the background as well. I used Neural DSP Tone King plugin for both of the guitars in the background. What did you use as your setup along with the MuleCaster?
So I played the MuleCaster into a Mythos Olympus overdrive, which is, I think, based on a Gainster circuit, into Two Rock traditional clean. I then mic'd the Two Rocks 2x12 cab with a Lewitt MTP 440 DM, which is their dynamic microphone. I hate making these comparisons, but think an SM57.
Yeah.
And I used an Alder Audio H44 ribbon microphone, and paired those. And I just sent you the one file of the mix of those two microphones.
Yes, that was great. You sent me those as a stereo file. That was really useful. Now, I did apply a little bit of Universal Audio Pure Plate Reverb to the guitar tracks afterwards, just subtly, and you won't really hear it. It was more to just get it to sit in the mix a little better, just to make it slightly less dry. But other than that,
because there was a little bit of reverb from the amp on as well, just needed a little glue.
Exactly that. But let's take a listen, and then we'll see what you think. Now, there it was. That was, the MuleCaster. What's the full name of the company again?
Mule Resophonic Guitars.
Right. That's a strong name.
Very strong name. I love the Mule imagery. The one thing I am sad about when I got my Mule and my Mavis specifically, and it didn't matter that I didn't order from Mule at the time, but now they offer a slotted headstock option.
Oh.
And it was not an option when I was ordering mine. So now I'm like, do I sell mine and order a new one with a slotted headstock? It's real tempting.
Yeah, that is a cool thing. But yes, there was the demo. Some great slide playing there, Philip. I really enjoyed that. And it's kind of I guess being in baritone tuning, it's one of those instruments that's not going to lend itself to super fast bluesy noodly work.
Yeah. When you first sent the track, I was like, oh yeah, I'm gonna put all kinds of blues pyrotechnics on this, and then I was like, not on a baritone with 17s.
Yeah,
that's just not happening. So instead I decided, let's lean into this laying back thing. How do you lean into laying back? I don't know how you do that. No. But that's what I did. I was like, let's keep it chill, keep it groovy, whatever. Tried to make sure that I did span sort of the full range of the instrument in the demo, with, you know, a bunch of sliding sixes and some very close double stops, and then of course the slide work, trying to get all of those tones in there.
Yeah, I thought it was great. I totally forgot when I recorded the track that it was baritone tuned. I said this to you at the time after I said,
yeah.
Because I did it in E. And of course, if I'd have done it in B, you'd have been able to use the full range of the guitar. So I apologize.
You know, on that five chord, I really could have gone down and just that low B and just kill it. But I decided not to. And it's fine. Actually, it was great because I did keep it in B standard. So it's in baritone standard. That's not open tuning.
It's difficult for slide work. I can do
that. It just takes it was a project that I decided last year, actually in conversations with another patron of the Guitar Nerds and the 40 Watt Podcast, Kyle Harris, really getting into slide playing a lot more, and I've decided to really focus on it. And one of those things was, I need to be able to play in standard tuning.
Right.
I need to not be handcuffed by open tunings.
Yeah, I understand that.
Yeah, so that's been an ongoing project of getting better at playing in standard tuning.
I see. Well, yeah, very cool. But yes, Mule, dear listener, you've got to check them out. Looks like, £250 deposit across the board on, or $250 deposit across the board on the Mulecaster, the Mavis, the Resonators, or the Thunder Mule bass. They even have an available immediately section, which has nothing in it. Damn.
Yeah. Post on Mondays. They'll post what they call a modest Mavis, which is like a Mavis with a little bit stripped down options.
Right.
Sometimes they don't even have knobs. Sometimes they do have knobs. It's just, and they're also been doing things like builder's choice. So what they'll do is, one of the guys or gals that work at Mule will just be allowed to build what you want, and we'll sell it as that.
That is very
and
cool.
Just to make something cool and interesting.
Yeah, that is cool. Yeah, well, I absolutely love this. The Thunder Mule bass is really, damn. But we'll see. We'll get there in the end. I mean, on basses, I recently, and I posted this on the Guitar Nerds Instagram, dear listener, you might have seen it. I made a Partcision bass. It doesn't work quite as well as Partscaster, does it? But
no.
But
we're going to workshop that name for you, Joe. Yeah, we're going to come up with something.
Thanks. I appreciate it. But yeah, I had a few bits that have been lying around recently, and I really want to get them together. And I finally, eventually put together everything over the weekend. So I had this like no-name precision bass body, you know, something random, but you know, it proportionately it was cut very well, it was made from alder, it was perfectly good. I picked it up super cheap, you know, from a friend of a friend sort of thing, but it's it definitely had potential. It was just finished very, very badly. So I gave it to Matt Oram over at Fidelity Guitars, and he stripped it and refinished it in kind of a mid relic Olympic white. Great. His nitro finishing is just really good, really high quality. Couldn't have been happier with the body when it came back. And I popped a set of Lola pickups in there. So just the Lola vintage precision pickups in there, low output, really classic sounding. I got an old Wilkinson bridge. I found someone relicking Wilkinson bridges, which, you know, I mean, whatever you think about this. This one's actually slightly over relics because a couple of the thingies are stuck, are like rusted in.
Oh, no.
So, which is actually a problem for setting this up. I need to change that. But nonetheless, that will be fine. So I got this relict Wilkinson bridge on there. And the neck that I had was an old Japanese 62 reissue precision bass neck, which is great. They're 7 2.25 inch radius. They're not too deep, so they're still kind of quite fast to play. Mm-hmm. And this one actually before me had been refinished in a nitro and aged, so you had gorgeous lacquer cracking on that. They'd sanded the gloss down on the back of the neck, which I know is like a popular thing for custom shops, but I actually like sticky nitro, so I was like, but still, it looked great and it really felt the part. And those Japanese necks are made to a high standard. The rosewood was gorgeous and dark, not like modern Fenders where it's very, very light, a light wood now. And I just had a standard, like a 3-ply black precision base scratch plate on there. I got a Jaguar Mute kit that I fitted to the base, that I drilled the body for and fit a Jaguar Mute kit on the bridge. And I splashed out on a set of Labella flat wounds. I got their 110 to 54. Weird that it's 54 and 55. 110 to 54, which are their 1954 spec strings, so that I could get it down into D standard. And so, so that's the complete thing. Aged Olympic white, flat wounds, Jaguar Mute kit, Lola pickups, nitro finish.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by iZotope and Native Instruments, two companies who provide the bulk of the recording and editing tools used by Guitar Nerds. If you have a home studio, or if you're thinking about getting into demo recording from home, then iZotope and Native Instruments provide the tools that you need to make premium quality recordings with ease and with virtually no equipment other than your guitar and laptop. iZotope make all the voice editing and audio repair tools that I use for the podcast each week, and Native Instruments Guitar Rig 7 is one of the best, most comprehensive collections of virtual effects and guitar amplifiers available anywhere. Use discount code NERDS10 on any product in the iZotope and Native Instruments catalog for 10% off their fantastic range of tools.
I couldn't be happier with kind of how it turned out for something that I spent relatively little money on. this is the best results I've ever had from a parts caster style instrument. This thing is, if I was to pick it up in a shop and someone was to tell me it was custom shop, you know, I think I'd believe it. You know,
you'd buy it.
Yeah, exactly. It's really, really good. I couldn't be happy with how it's turned out. And it's made me want to do more parts casters. It's not something that I've ever done. I always send them off to other people, or I'm always like, I could build this in parts, or I could order a custom shop, you know, and have some company do something like that. Like, I go to Rigby Music at the moment, are putting together a bass for me. That's that, you know, instead of me putting it together myself, which is going to be inspired by the old Mark Hoppus precision stroke jazz bass thing. But have you ever done a parts caster yourself, Philip?
I've done a few over the years, and you know, it's various reasons. Maybe something just needed to be changed in general. I don't enjoy them as much as some people do. And I know why it is. It's just, it's a lot of work. And I know that when something doesn't work, like when something just doesn't work, maybe the holes don't line up, or maybe, you know, just something wasn't what I thought it was going to be, it gets really frustrating.
Yeah.
And I worry about sinking money into a project and then it not working.
Yeah. It not end up being the thing you wanted it to be.
Right.
And then it's not so much the money then. I think it's the work. It's the time.
The time that you, it feels wasted. And I keep myself very busy, and that's time that I could have been spent doing something else, and I get frustrated with it. So I just don't do it. I understand the appeal. I totally understand it, because I wish I got as much joy out of it, because it seems like a ton of fun. Like you talking about it, it's like, I could put together a P bass parts caster project. That sounds fun. No, it doesn't. I'd have to track down the parts first of all, because, you know, you luckily had a Japanese P bass neck lying around.
Yeah.
You know,
that's true. This was
not everyone has a, you know, a back pantry full of bass necks that's just waiting for a project for them to go on.
Yeah. Yeah, fair. That is fair. Yeah. Well, I think it's definitely something that if you've never done before, dear listener, it's definitely worth trying. Pastcasters can be an awful lot of fun, but I do agree with you, Philip. They can also be just take a little bit too long.
They can be a nightmare too. Like they can end up just being a nightmare and not at all worth the time and effort you put into them. Yeah. But that's the thing, you go into it knowing.
Yeah.
And so I can't bring myself to do it. I want to be that guy. And you know, I've already got a reverb tab open looking for bass necks, but, yeah.
Okay. Well, moving on from parts classes, I did want to talk about another guitar of yours.
Yeah. Well, it's a borrowed guitar.
Yeah.
So listeners, this is going to be very hard for me to describe to you. I need you to understand that before we get going.
I'm looking forward to your attempt to describe this guitar using only verbal communication.
I know. Y'all, here's the deal. We're like, I don't know how many minutes with ads and all that other stuff into this podcast, but go over to YouTube and find the video of this so you can see what I'm talking about. So I got sent a guitar from my buddy Justin Motander of Motander Guitars. And Justin is one of the most innovative guitar builders I've ever met. And I don't say that because of his guitars. And I'm pretty sure he listens to this podcast. And so this is where I'm going to mildly apologize to Justin, even though I've said it to his face. He knows. The shapes and styles he uses aren't really my thing. And that's fine. He does have a few that I'm absolutely in love with, like the aesthetic. I feel like he nailed this like mid-century modern.
That's what I like that he does. When he does those, like, it is that, yeah, Jetson style. It's got that sort of space in the 50s kind of feel to it sometimes. And I really like that. Sometimes his stuff is modern, and then I'm like, oh, I'm not so into that. But is that, yeah, as you said, mid-century modern, I love that look. And he does it very well. Gorgeous lines.
Exactly. Yeah. The lines, especially with some of his use of pick guards and the way he styles them around his body shapes, they get really, really, really great. So I've got one. I don't have a model name because this is a prototype. I don't know that he's even named what it's going to be. It is sort of an elongated SSH guitar with a stop tail. With sort of like a chopped Tele Schaller stop tail. Three knobs. I do not know what this fingerboard wood is, but it is like dark chocolate and milk chocolate striped. Like it's wild. There's no getting that into the camera. I'm not going to be able to get that close enough.
No, the body shape reminds me somewhat of St. Vincent, dear listener. If you're looking the closest approximation, in that it is very skinny and very long, so it has that. I could see that St. Vincent.
If the St. Vincent were a surf guitar.
Very well put.
Looks like. So that's all well and good. I'm not going to talk about the playability. It's super playable. It's got a thinner than normal neck for me. What I love about what Justin's doing is his innovation in electronics. And so this one is a prototype. He's still sort of figuring it out. He had this at Fretboard Summit. I played a lot of guitars at Fretboard Summit, y'all. Fretboard, if you're in the U.S., and you're looking for a really great guitar hang, you need to go to Fretboard Summit. It's going to be bigger this year than ever. Anyway, that's my selling point for that. Go hang out. So the back, you viewers can see this.
There's an awful lot of cutout on the back, dear listener. Awful lot of back panel.
And it's got a magnetic back panel. And inside,
Seen the back of a Gibson RD? One of the original RDs, dear listener. That's what this looks like when you untake the plate. It is just full of circuitry to the brim.
And so inside is an Arduino computer. And it has a control panel on the top horn and an indicator strip. That's what this black on the front is. It's not a pick guard. There's actually lights that come on so that you can indicate and know what you're doing. Because, Joe, you'll notice there's no... there's no pickup switch on a 3-pickup guitar.
I just saw that, yeah.
Yeah, so the way this works is it's got a panel that swaps pickups, which if that were just it, you would say, well, why the hell are you doing it? Because, you know, like we've created switches, like 5-way switches exist. Super switches exist. No, this gets beyond that. the computer can control the swapping of the pickups. And so you can program phase relationships and phase switching through the Arduino. And so it has, by nothing more than pickup manipulation, onboard phaser, tremolo, vibrato. It's wild what all it can do. I haven't had time to sit down and really tinker with it. And I'm going to make a video on it at some point, but it is mind-bogglingly cool. The amount of sounds that you can get out of this guitar by manipulating it, that is not going to be for everyone. Not everyone is going to find that cool. And there's a lot of you listening right now with mouth agape. Did Philip, Mr. Vintage Gibson Carter, say that he likes something with a computer inside of it? Yes, I did. I think it's the raddest idea. Another invention that Justin has, I don't even know how it works. He sent me videos, but he has a completely reversible modification. That's the word I was looking for. Right. A completely reversible modification for hardtail guitars that basically adds a vibrato. Right. I don't even know how it works. That you go to his Instagram, go check out the videos.
Oh, yes. It's the block that you add onto the hardtail, isn't it? Yeah.
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 It's the wildest thing I've ever seen. And so it can add a vibrato to your guitar. And once again, it's just more ideas that he's perfecting. I love seeing a builder just being completely courageous and doing something completely out of left field. Now, this pickup swapping idea isn't entirely original. He told me someone who did something similar before, although he's taken it way further than that prior builder ever did. So, you know, everyone stands on the shoulders of those that came before him, but I think he's making some of the coolest thing. Y'all go follow Justin over on Instagram. It is Justin Motander. I'm going to get this right. Justin Motander Jones. And I'm sure Joe will put a link in the description.
I will do indeed. Justin Motander Jones. Do check it out. I love stuff like this where you've got a guitar builder who is just, as you say, just trying to be courageous, just trying to create interesting, you know, new ideas. And even though it's a computer, we're not talking about, it's not something like Lava Me guitars where they're like, here's an iPhone in the side of your guitar.
Oh, right.
Now you can sort of Bluetooth connect to another guitarist in Korea. You know, it's not like that.
Wait, that's a thing?
Yeah, that is literally a thing. I've got one of the Lava Me's. They're acoustics. So the idea is you can only turn it. The downside is you can only like use the guitar if it's connected to Wi-Fi. So you absolutely can't use it out of the house. But once you've turned it on and it logs in and everything, I could play a little bit. I could bring up one of the backing tracks, play along and write a little chord section. And then I could see who else is online using their Lava Me, and I could send them that and be like, hey, do you want a solo over this bit? And they would get my recording real time. They would solo, and then that would come back and play out the sound hole on my. So that is the extreme end of
Nothing like that.
No, exactly. That was the point I was making, is whilst there is a computer on board, the computer is on board in order to make real world, like mechanical effects,
right?
An actual option, because we're talking about creating a phaser through, through actual pickup phasing. We're talking about creating tremolo by jumping between different pickups at different output levels. I think that's very cool.
It's the coolest sound, and I can't wait to really deep dive into what it's capable of, and honestly, to see what he comes out with further in the future with the idea. Because it can honestly, it's at a point it can do a lot of things. There's so much you can do with just manipulating volume, tone, and pickup selection.
Yeah,
just by that alone.
Exactly. I think that's so interesting, so unique. Yeah, really looking forward to your video, dear listener. Make sure you watch Philip's 40 Watt Podcast video on the Motander when it is done. There's no name for it, right? It's just a prototype at the moment.
Right, it's just a prototype as far as I'm aware. If Justin told me the name, I'm sorry, Justin, I've forgotten it.
Okay, well, before we go, because dear listener, me and Philip will head over to Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerd soon, where we're going to be talking about some things. Peter Pesce got a simplifier recently, and I kind of thought simplifier, sort of a brand, you know, that, or not a brand, a type of effect that a unit that we haven't really talked about much on this podcast, and it got lots of questions when he showed that he got one. So I want to talk about that, and I think they're a really great option. So we'll talk about the simplifier over on the Patreon, amongst other things. But before we go, maybe let's talk about one piece of news. And Philip, I will let you decide what from our list of news items we've got. We can talk about Antigua being back in Squire. We can talk about Moog clones. There have been a few more of those. There's, of course, the IK Multimedia Tonex 1. Thorpe Effects have brought out the Chris Buck actual valve-loaded effect. And, of course, the big news, really big, big news for this week, Strymon Big Sky MX. Where do you want to go? What do you want to talk about?
I tell you what, the one I want to talk about the most is maybe the most surprising one, and mm-hmm. it's the IK Tonex one. Right. Because let's be honest, I don't know what I can say good about the Antigua. I know you like it. That's okay. the Strymon Big Sky feels like it was due an update. It's been around for a long time at this point. It's the best-selling reverb pedal of all time. It's got to be, right?
Probably. Must
be. Must be. And the Thorpe Chris Buck, I love Thorpe. I love Chris. I love tube overdrives. That's great. I love that it's there. Maybe I'll try one at some point. But the IK Tonex 1, I think I did a whole podcast episode talking about this. I brought Scott from the Effects Loop on, who plays in church gigs and, you know, those kind of like modeling gigs. He's had the regular Tonex software since it came out, and the Tonex. He also uses a quad Cortex, and he's used Kemper and
so he's really an authority on this style of gear.
Exactly. Way more than I am.
Worship scene really are, aren't they? That's kind of their thing.
It's funny because, you know, everybody was like, oh, well, everybody, when the quad Cortex and the Kemper and like they thought they were the Helix killer. I'm like, no, because Line 6 has no interest in capture technology as far as I can tell, because they're into modeling things. I know this is overstating to a component level. They say component level. Whatever level they actually model things, they do a really, really great job of their amp models. And once they fix their cab models, the amp started sounding really, really good.
Yeah.
I hear a lot less people talking about having to have all of these IRs for their Helix units now, because the speakers on the speaker simulations are so good now on the Helix. It's totally different animal. It's a completely different animal. And I wonder if the Tonex, I know Kemper just came out with their Kemper player, right? The smaller, more affordable version to put on your pedal board.
Mm-hmm.
I have to wonder if this doesn't just rain all over the Kemper player parade, and maybe to some degree the quad Cortex. Quad Cortex is a little more. It does a little more. But for $170.
That is a crazy price.
It's insane.
A crazy price.
For a pedal the size of a Moor, tiny mini pedal, you stick it to the end of your pedal board, or you put it in your gig bag, you capture your actual amps or access the huge library they've already built of captures, and you've got it on your pedal board. You can have your actual amp with you as a backup or as your main rig. And I love the IR2, and I love the other options that are out there. But Tonex is out here saying, hey, we can do that. We can do captures, and we can do it cheaper than you can. And we can sound good. The intro to my podcast is a Tonex, Joe, that you recorded. The music is your Tonex demo.
I still absolutely love the Tonex. You know, the only reason that when I record demos, I still tend to favor the Neural DSP Tone Master is just because I have presets set up on that, and I guess I've never really bothered with the Tonex building presets. If I did, I'm sure I'd use that, because it is the sound quality from the Tonex. I mean, we said it at the time, didn't we, when it came out, and I said it a lot at the time, but I didn't expect anything from this. It's IK Multimedia. They make phone adapted plugins for home practice. It's not for me.
They make guitar rig. Yeah, they make guitar rig and the iRig. And
exactly. That stuff's not for me. And so when they sent it, I was like, I put it off for a couple of weeks, like even unboxing it, because I wasn't excited about it. And then when I did, I was like, oh, this actually sounds fantastic. Like the Dombo stuff on there sounded fantastic. And so the fact that they have taken this, put it in an even smaller unit, so it's perfectly pedalboard friendly. I just think it's so good. Obviously, the downside that we're not talking about is you've got very limited onboard control without plugging it into a computer. And as far as I'm aware, it's not app driven. So you'd literally have to have a computer to USB it in to chew things. But what you're essentially doing is you load in, is it 12 or 20? Yeah, 20 preloaded presets can be loaded in. So that's a decent wedge that you then have some control with over the actual unit itself. But even with that limited, because of course people are comparing it to the IR2, right? Because the IR2, really easy to dial it in for every single room you're in, and that's the advantage of the IR2. For the price of this, with the quality of sounds you're getting, even though you don't get that versatility, that is a lot of quality for not a lot of money.
There's a whole lot to love about it if you need that kind of control. Also, you know, you can the foot switch can be A and B instead of a bypass.
Oh, so
you can
switch between
two rigs.
That's very good.
You can have dual presets. You obviously, you know, you have your controls on the top. You can manipulate some of it just from the pedal itself.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, it's 320 milliamps. Right. You can power it off one output of your whatever power supply you're using, assuming you're not using like an old school pedal power too that only has like 100 or 200 milliamps. But 320 milliamps is lower than most other, every other option that does capture, that plays captures.
Yeah,
and at $170, okay, it doesn't have stereo, buy two of them. You know?
Yeah. It's there's a lot to love. Tonex really came out of nowhere because everyone's doing a budget option like Hot Tone and, you know, Valiton and all of the entry, you know, Moore, all of those sort of entry level companies, they offer something like this. But, you know, I had a friend who got the Moore or the Hot Tone one and he ended up being like, well, the latency is so much that I can't gig this.
Yeah,
And so it's a problem with the cheaper products trying to do something as advanced as this digital tech is, and IK Multimedia seem to have come in and just been like, oh, here's something really high quality, and we'll make it really affordable.
Yeah, and the thing that blew my mind when the Tonex was released, it was on the back of them putting out their four big box pedals.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, so that's what they've been working on since their last release. You won't see anything from them for a while. Then like literally the next year they drop, oh, you like captures? Hey, we can do that. Let's do that. And it was the nonchalance of their release. I'm probably projecting that onto it. They probably were extremely stressed, extremely frustrated. I'm sure they worked very hard to get it out, but it seemed very nonchalant of, oh, yeah, we can do that and beat this price. Let's go and sound great.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about it. I don't know that I'm excited enough to buy one just because I would be buying it because I'm excited about the existence of it. This would not find a home in my rig and in my playing.
Sure. No, I feel that. I just think this is such a high quality product at such an affordable price that for people trying to get into or who wants to get into this sort of thing, or for people looking for a cheap and easy fly rig, this is now the best option out there. And I think I've got a lot of time for it for that. Yes, I agree. Probably not for me, but a great product, well designed with a real demographic of people who I think will love it.
Absolutely.
But that does, in fact, bring us up to time on this week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast. As I said, Philip and I are going to head over to patreon.com/guitarnerds, where we're going to do a Patreon-exclusive episode of the podcast. We're going to take a look at the Simplifier, amongst other things, maybe a couple of other news items. We'll see. Before we go, I want to thank all of our top tier, our $10 tier Patreon supporters. I want to thank them by name for helping support Guitar Nerds through the years. If you want to become a supporter of Guitar Nerds, dear listener, you can. There are several tiers at which you can join, and you can get access to our Patreon exclusive episodes and our back catalogue as well. Here's all the wonderful people. Thank you very much to Stefan Carlson, to Nicholas Strom, Rocket Rob Patterson, Phil Sadler, Marcus Deluxe, Suresh, Dusonic Pickups, Rob Witherden, Anton Fryant, Barry Gresbick, Steve Davis, John Conaway, Yogi the Guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Harris, Sean Hughes, Andy Hoffler, Eric Hemmer, Jeffrey Wax, Dan Pilver, Brian Einsler, Dylan Griffiths, Mark Hizal Kadawaki, Eric File, Peter Peche, Chris Franklin, Andy Manley, Joe Puttick, Blake Wyland, Phil Radomski, Dave Lee, Ross Edwards, Jason Wharton, James Dorr, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losef, Stephen Burke, Robin Smith, Kytopia the Band, JD Short, Andy McKenzie, Brad Page, Rob Nordvik, Scott O'Brien, and of course, Moog Gravett. Thank you very much, one and all. But yes, as I said, we're now going to head over to Patreon. Thank you very much for listening. Philip, thank you for being a part of Guitar Nerds once again.
Always happy to do it.
We'll be back next week with more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Au revoir.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.